The political fortunes of Judith Collins have taken a perilous tumble, with the National Party leader slipping to 5.6% in the preferred Prime Minister stakes. That's a collapse of 12.8%. At the same time, the party recorded a slight increase in its overall support to 27%. This is the News Hub Read research poll out last night. Political commentator Ben Thomas joins us now. Good morning, Ben.
Morning, Corin.
How do you think National Party MPs at today's caucus will react to this?
I mean, you would think it will be pretty downbeat. You know, the party vote being static is, you know, largely static since the election. Not a huge surprise, probably what you would expect so shortly after such a landslide win last year, particularly when you think about the reasons that the government won. The really concerning one will be that preferred PM. It's not so much that it fell, Colmar Brunton fell, but again, that was largely down to a change in methodology. But the real red flag is being outpolled by a guy who hasn't been Prime Minister for over 4 years, hasn't been in politics for 4 years, and you can only really plausibly register that as a protest vote by the national base.
Do you believe it is a reaction, or can be put down to a reaction, to her handling of the He Pūapua report?
Look, it's hard to say, but if you look at the Oriwa bump, which is, you know, will have been front of mind for Judith Collins when she approached the sort of race card issue, the first polling which showed the sort of meteoric rise of National after the Dom Brash speech was 18 days after the speech. This poll came out 18 days after Judith Collins first waded into the battle, calling the Māori Health Authority segregationist. So, look, yeah, you could draw parallels. She might argue that, look, she's bringing in more examples, more case studies that she says flow from the sort of dread hand of the He Pūapua document. She hasn't really convincingly made the case for those linkages. But it certainly is not the kind of big splash or sugar hit that maybe she would have anticipated by running those race issues.
Well, why do you think that is?
Well, a couple of reasons. The first is that we're a very different world from 2004. You know, the co-governance by Māori of, you know, some of New Zealand's best-known landmarks, for instance, the Maunga, the volcanic cones in Auckland, is now about 10 years old. You know, people in the old days, you know, I used to be a press secretary for the Treaty Minister, you know, 10 years ago. And there you could sort of forgive people for being a little bit uncertain about what co-governance or partnership arrangements in their area might mean for them. 10 years on, the sky hasn't fallen. The vast majority of people have seen no difference to their lives at all. And so it's much harder to kind of, you know, stir up that uncertainty or suspicion. The other thing is that, you know, just in terms of the politics of it, Jacinda Ardern, you know, is very trusted by New Zealanders. She's said that, you know, there is no agenda, unsurprisingly, to create a Māori upper house in 2040. The public will take her word for that. If this government has a problem, it's not doing things that they said they would, like building 100,000 houses. It's not springing surprises where they had ruled something out previously.
Do you think, then, that any National MPs will break ranks and criticise Judith Collins about her approach?
I think that is inevitable. You've seen a number of high-profile MPs have been very reticent to follow her, particularly with that more fiery rhetoric that she used early on, segregationist. I don't think any of her MPs have actually, certainly none of her sort of senior or high-profile MPs have repeated that kind of language. And look, part of that will be that they're thinking about with an eye to the future. Dom Brash never won an election. John Key, one of the first thing he did as leader was distance himself from Brash and that Brashian rhetoric. So anyone who's got ambitions within within National right now for the future of the leadership will be very careful not to associate them too closely with the sort of divisive politics.
All right, let's talk about a couple of people then. Christopher Luxon is in the mix at 2.4%. Simply too soon for him, do you believe?
You're really rolling the dice, right? So National will be aware of the kind of perils of just stuffing a CV in a suit and presenting him to the public as the next Prime Minister after the Todd Muller experiment failed. He really hasn't done a lot. That doesn't rule him out being a good leader. Part of the bind that Collins has put the National Party in is that, you know, normally you would sort of say, look, let's just have a year of doing normal opposition work, see who stands out, see who can make a name for themselves to establish themselves as a potential next leader. With Collins, she's been on the back foot since she got the leadership. She keeps pulling out different things from the grab bag of tricks, trying to get, you know, a short-term hit or a short-term revival. And that makes it much harder for, you know, these individuals to sort of make a name for themselves in their own areas, you know, on their own steam. Instead, they're caught up in the slipstream of, you know, right now the separatist agenda.
Simon Bridges, where does he fit into all of this? I mean, he's such a, you can't ignore him.
No, look, and Bridges has been not particularly quietly satisfied, obviously, over the last year at the performance of his two successors. I think it's no secret that he feels he was a little unfairly done by as leader. At the same time, you know, again, he's also being outpolled by a national leader sort of 4 years earlier. Whatever sort of mini Simon Bridges revival has taken place is largely a sort of meme-based internet thing rather than a popular groundswell demanding his return.
All right, just before we finish, let's talk a little bit about the government. As you say, they have been under pressure on a lot of fronts lately. There was the botch up over the pay freeze. There's all sorts of things which they have been criticised for. None of it is cutting through, according to this poll.
Well, look at the reasons that they won the election, which was, one, the top-class COVID response. They've managed to, you know, despite hiccups, despite, you know, sort of seemingly interminable lapses on the border, nonetheless, we've remained COVID-free, and that's the measure that people will use to judge it. The travel bubble is up and running. But most importantly, people are feeling pretty well off. And that's part of the reason, for instance, that, you know, divisive rhetoric is going to be a challenge to make work in the electorate. If people are feeling comfortable, and, you know, particularly those median middle-class voters, their house prices are through the roof, they've saved money because of lockdowns and not being able to travel overseas, unemployment is coming down, ironically, except for Māori, and they are feeling pretty confident and secure about their lives, and that's always going to help the government of the day.
Sounds like that means we'll be getting a steady-as-she-goes budget as well then this week, do you think?
I wouldn't think there'll be much to scare the horses. You know, in a way, it provides a sort of unique opportunity for a social democratic government to do some of the things that it would like to, like raise benefits, because people will not be feeling insecure about their own position in society. And that's the kind of terrain that you would want to take advantage of as a social democratic government, to try and sort of raise benefits when people are feeling well off themselves and are less likely to be sort of trying to protect their slice of the pie.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. Kia ora. That is political commentator Ben Thomas.